Good evening, everybody. How are you tonight? Oh, wait, sorry. How was your day? Okay, good. Right. If you haven't heard, that's the new thing, because if you say, how have you been, the other person is likely to say, oh, I had a bad childhood, and my hairline continues to recede, and can you lend me $20? So, but if you say, how's your day going, the other person is more likely to say, oh, I had a really good lunch. So that's something else you can take from what will be an entertaining and instructive evening. So you're doing okay. Why don't you give yourself a hand, okay? Yeah. All right, yeah. I just love clapping. I love it when people clap at me, and I love to clap back at them. So I'm going to give you some more chances to clap later. I've been up here many times as a reader, but tonight I'm an introducer. So before I introduce Kaveh Akbar, I want to honor my predecessors, the unsung men and women who have introduced the readers over decades, which is, I don't know about you, that's how long I've been coming to this or the venues that that preceded it. We ought to have a statue, you know, the unknown introducer out there in the parking lot. But my point is that almost without fail, every visiting writer I've spoken to after their reading has said something like, that's the best introduction I've ever had. So you do what, a one-hour tutorial where you train these people up and teach them how to introduce? And the answer is no. They're just good. These are our grad students. They love each other. They love poetry and fiction. They set a very high bar for themselves, and they meet it every time. And when I tell them this, the visiting writers say, I be dog. You know, if they're from the South. Otherwise, they'll say something more New Jersey-ish or Portland, but words to that effect, I be dog. So, yeah, and I've always wanted just to kind of look back to that army of introducers and say, can we get a hand of applause for those unsung heroes, the introducers? Yeah. Yeah. And they're like the undead. There'll be more next week and more and more and more. They'll just keep coming. Let's see, what can I tell you about Kaveh that you don't already know? Well, that he's known to be calm and pensive. He turns gregarious and sullen. A man of extremes, both in terms of his character and his deeds, yet one with a face that is so beautiful as to be a countenance I scarcely ever saw, and his eyes, the open portals of the sun, things of light and for light. Wait, I'm sorry, that's Coleridge's description of Byron. Wrong paper, hold on. Yeah, here's the one I want. Let me tell you a few things about Kaveh. One is about Dive Dapper. And if you don't know about Dive Dapper, it's the website that Kaveh created that features interviews with major voices in contemporary poetry, people like Sharon Olds, Gerald Stern, Afa Michael Weaver, Albert Goldbarth, Mary Ruffel. The list just goes on and on and on. But the great thing about Dive Dapper is that the conversations are just that. They're not interviews with questions and answers. So this week I was looking at the Dive Dapper chat with Heather Crystal, who at that time would read a poem to you if you called her up, which is a pretty good labor-intensive but I think effective marketing thing. You call Heather up and she'd read to you, which of course our man did. And apparently he put it on a speakerphone because the conversation goes like this. Kaveh, I don't think you knew this, but one of the times you read a poem to me, you were actually reading to the entire front of house staff of a restaurant where I was working at the time. Crystal, laughing, oh, no way. Kaveh, yeah, you regale maybe half a dozen people who had otherwise been very bored. Crystal, oh, I love that. Kaveh, it was wonderful. Everyone was thoroughly charmed. Crystal, I used to be a waitress, and there were these little moments where I would snatch a little time to write, you know, after getting everything set up before we opened. It makes me happy to think of poems going back into that kind of situation. Kaveh, for sure. It was great. I teach now, but I really loved being a waiter, working that kind of job. My brain was just automated in autopilot, and I could be off wherever I wanted to in my higher brain, you know? Crystal, yeah, absolutely. I sometimes fantasize about working as a mail person, delivering mail. I think that would be the best sort of job in the world. So you see how this works? Kaveh has this format that actually allows you to see the poet's mind at work. So I want you to know about Dive Dapper, and also want you to know about this book and the poems in it. which book is available for you tonight from Hannah Beth and Daryl from Midtown. How about a hand for Midtown Reader? Yeah. Okay. Of these poems, Eduardo C. Corral says, Akbar's mind, like his language, is perpetually in motion. And where does that mind and language go? This is me talking now. Everywhere. The first two lines of the first poem in Calling a Wolf read this way. Sometimes God comes to earth disguised as rust, chewing away a chain link fence or mariner's knife. So in an instant, first words, first poem, we're way beyond that standard idea of God as the robed figure in the Mel Brooks movies or the disinterested clockmaker of the deists. In this first poem, and in the ones that follow, Kava reminds me of the Emerson who says, cultivate the habit of being grateful for every good thing that comes to you, and to give thanks continuously, and because all things have contributed to your advancement, you should include all things in your gratitude. So don't be surprised when you hear Kava actually arguing with God in these poems. A poem from the middle of the book begins, I swear to God, I swear at God, I won't mention what he does to me. I'm just going to read that much because it's kind of a curse. I don't know whether you planned it that way, but when somebody quotes, you know, eight of your poems, those are the eight you picked to read that night. So, but there's a lot more. So, and Kava's adept; he can turn those pages if he needs to. But the only other thing I want to say before I bring the man up here is that if Kava Akbar had a tail, it would always be wagging. Let's have a round of applause for dogs. Yeah. A one-word description of Kava would be merry, yet the merriest waves undulate over the stormiest water. There are bleak moments in this book. There is addiction. There is loneliness. There are bloody thoughts. But as you're about to hear, no one in the business is better than Kava Akbar at taking us from those sunless depths where the sea snakes bat around blindly up to the surface where we lucky ones are bobbing on our pool toys and enjoying all the good things that only the poet can dredge up from the darkest waters. I've already said Kava's mind goes everywhere, and in a third poem, in Calling a Wolf, he says, in five words, the best thing a poet can say about this world we live in, he says, being anywhere makes me thirsty. These poems will make you thirsty and hungry, too, for more, and you can satisfy that thirst and hunger by buying a copy of Calling a Wolf from Hannah Beth and Daryl, our friendly booksellers back there by the door that we're not going to clap for again because we've already clapped for them one time. But when Kava's done, I guarantee you're going to echo the phrase I used earlier, and you're going to say, I be dog. So how about you practice it with me right now? Ready? One, two, three, I be dog. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Kava Akbar.
Hi, everybody. How are you guys doing? It's really, really wonderful to be here. It's really wonderful to be among. I miss this place all the time. I left a place where it was like 7 degrees, and I was like digging my car out from under snow today. And I came here, and I didn't even need to put on a jacket. What a wild thing. Thank you, David. That was extraordinary. I liked the Coleridge bit especially. and the snakes bobbing up on the pool toys. That was pretty special. I was a fan of that. I'm going to read some poems. A lot of them will be newer, but I'll read some from the book since David did so much of the legwork in selling that. I'm really, really glad to be here. This poem's called Vines. They're fat, wet, vines creeping into my house through the pipes and through the walls, gentle as blue flames. They curl into my living There is ice in my attic, sugar on my tile. I am present and useless, like a nose torn from a face and set in a bowl. When I saw God, I used the wrong pronouns. God bricked up my mouth hole. His fists were white as gold. There were roaches in my beard. Now I live like a widow. Every day a heave of knitting patterns and sex toys. My family speaks of me with such pride. Nunesh Turogan, they say, his bread is in oil. I thank them for that and for their chromosomes, most of which have been lovely. I am lovely too. My body is hard and choked with juice like a plastic throat stuffed with real grapes. My turn-ons include Ovid and fake leather. My turn-offs have all been ushered into the basement. I'll drink to them and to any victory. The vines are all growing toward the foot of my bed. I am waiting for them to come under the covers. I am the only person still in this house. There is no one here to look away. I meant to start with this one, I forgot. This is called Against Poetry. I just thought it would be a funny thing to start a reading with a poem called Against Poetry. Pretend I did. There is no word in English for the circle left on a table from a cold glass, or for the difference in flavor between fresh and dried fruit. There's no precise way to say I pushed my thumbs through the eyes of the old living, except to say all that, and then it barely seems a miracle anymore. A lamp burned for 8 days, or the prophet split the moon. Why bother? We speak of the divine with the panicked futility of a barn swallow tossing her eggs out the nest to spare them a crow. Theory proves useless. Confusion, the only true coin of the realm. The stories stay the same. This new drug tames that old one. Fat hardens in a bowl. Three boys stand naked in a shallow pond, whispering nervously, counting each other's bones. Who would want to name any of it? We are wired to feel comfort at human voice, and we know nothing can conquer comfort. Still, the shape of a bad name is like a toothpick swallowed. Even if you survive, the splinters will stay in your throat long enough for you to swear off toothpicks forever. Some have managed it, abandoned language entirely, the bravest among them not opening their mouths for decades at a time. They know what the saints knew. Silence to a tongue is different than silence to a soul. The difference is pain, or the difference is light. But either way, there is a difference, and it matters, though here in the belly of the present, the difference is shrinking right in front of us, like an oversalted plum, like a sullen crow sulking slowly back home. This is called Against Dying. If the body is just a parable about the body, if breath is a leash to hold the mind, then staying alive should be easier than it is. Most sick things become dead things. At 24, my liver was already covered in fatty rot. My mother filled a tiny coffin with picture frames. I spent the year drinking from test tubes, weeping wherever I went. Somehow it happened. Wellness crept into me like a roach nibbling through an eardrum. For a time, the half minutes of fire in my brainstem made me want to pull out my spine, but even those have become bearable, so how shall I live now in the unexpected present? I spent so long in a lover's quarrel with my flesh, the peace seems overcautious, too polite. I say, stop being cold, or make that blue bluer, and it does. We speak to each other in this code where every word means obey. I sit under a poplar tree with a thermos of chamomile, feeling useless as an oath against dying. I put a sugar cube on my tongue and swallow it like a pill. brought a lot of new things. Oh, a funny thing that happened. So I'm Iranian. I was born in Tehran. And some of you may know that the ghazal is a poetic form native to that region of the world. And oftentimes I find that at readings, people will come up to me afterwards and ask if this poem or that poem was a ghazal. And I don't write ghazals, and none of my poems sound like ghazals. But it's sort of this way of like leveraging a little bit of like intellectual capital into, I get it, but it's, but I don't write ghazals. They've always really sort of intimidated me, you know, in the long shadow of Aga Shahid Ali or, you know, other people who actually do it really well. All this to say, I wrote a ghazal, and I'm very excited about it. So I'm going to read it. This is called Ghazal Made of Eggshells. If you're immortal, God better be too. Otherwise? Hello, have you disrobed? The nursemaid is stomping her hooves. Don't make her fret like that. The hungry bear won't dance. Burnt milk burnt her tongue. How to find your voice? Try. You're bound to it like a knight to his sentry. Everything forgets like that. Dip a finger in your bourbon, tap it to your lip. Bad water, bedwetter. Now watch these hands through your blood, jealous moths. How do they heaven upset like that? The key ground smooth to fit every lock, opens none. The bitter morning uselessly in the rain. In the beginning was the eye, and the eye was wet like that. Like a pin pushed through a plane of glass. Like things lasting longer than you can bear. Like a sundial gone bad. Like your own name, dead set like that. Thanks. When my book came out, my mom reads my poems, my dad doesn't. And when my book came out, my mom read the book, and the first thing she said was, why are there all these poems about your dad in here and so few about me? Which is not true, like just objectively, quantitatively is not true. But I, you know, ever the good son that I am, I wrote her a poem. Bless you. Aw, bless you. I wrote her a poem, but fuck up that I am, it begins talking about my dad for like a hearty chunk of the poem. So, but that's kind of what she gets. I love my mom. She's great. You all would love her. It's called Ultrasound. My father is tying concertina wire around his garden, which is now all but ruined by squirrels, deer, and worst of all, rabbits with cucumber seeds stuck to their tails. I am an apex predator. My father is an apex predator. God makes us in pairs. My mother searches the lawn for four-leaf clovers, pinning them to a scrapbook, pinning moments to time. She gives each one a name. Buck comes onto porch and hospital note from Kaveh. While she makes tea inside, I search the house for a lighter and can't even find matches. What I miss most about winter is the brightness of winter. Summer's all foggy and wet. My mother hovers in the kitchen like a strange tune. She is out of saffron and has no money for more. She weeps over her bleach white rice until my father comes in, cracks an egg over the plate, bursts the yolk, says, see, says, yellow. My mother smiles so big and sad, she wrinkles into the future where my eyes are yellow again, maybe from the yolk, maybe something else. My fur is coming in so thick, my mother would squeal with pride if she could see it. When she was pregnant, I kicked so hard, so often, she could barely sleep, staying up all night. She thought she must be full of bunnies. Thanks. This is a little love poem.
called In the Beginning. In the Beginning. Holding a mirror under your nose, I swore I could see your soul. Like a knot in a harp string, it looked hard and pluckable. I wanted to feed you plate after plate of watermelon, even the rinds. I wanted to give you a garnet big as a hand fruit. We were saying words constantly every day, a whole new set, thread count, violin, beef cheek, half our bones lived in our hands and feet. They still do. They're the ones most likely to crack, to ache like the sky after a storm. I held your face up to my face, your eyes level with mine. I could see through your pupils into the flower, into the mouth of the flower. It said, baby eats what mommy eats. We filled our ashtrays with pistachio shells. We drank hot tea from plastic cups. A weird little one. This is called No is a Complete Sentence. I've read here a few times before, here being the sort of general Tallahassee area, and so I'm trying to not read things that I read a lot, which means a lot of new things and a lot of like deep cuts from the book, which is fine. I think it's like maybe an act of hubris to even believe that my book has deep cuts. Anyways, this is called No is a Complete Sentence. The body happens and we consequence up. When I said I'd eat even your baby fat, what I meant was collect your meat and deliver it to me. I'm tired of chewing the same bones day in and day out. Look me in the eyes and stop being sad. They just discovered the skull of a mammoth in a pumpkin patch a few miles from here. As a boy, I had a filling punched out of my mouth. I found it the next day in a tuft of onion grass and tried to bite it back into my tooth. The mammoth was a dumb beast, all low forehead and too close eyes. The real world doesn't care about our spiritual conditions, just asks that we be well enough to smile at its clamor. What can I do for you, little vermin? Little casket of gold. Milk splashes into a bowl and coronates itself with a crown of droplets. I too have been trying to exalt my own body, but there is no switch to flip for this. I fumble toward grace like a vine searching for a wall. Any drunk can tell you willpower is useless, but that doesn't stop us from trusting it. The drowning man surfaces three times before sinking completely. Are you going to finish that tongue, my love? I'll chew it up for you, spit it down your throat. No blame lies with the weak, with the steam curling off the pot of hemlock tea. God can always see us, but he can especially see us now. You owe me nothing anymore. You still twitching vein pulled from my neck. You wise blood. You wise new blood. Damn. Thanks. Was that Kelly? Yeah. Hey, Kelly. This is cool. I don't know what this is. Language is a moving belt. Words slide along and you grab what you need. Sometimes you miss please and settle for now. Sometimes you need both fog and steam. Every you can be plural. The language affords us this. It's easy to mistake intensity for intimacy. Once I read a story that was all silence. I wanted to cover my mouth with white paint. I love myself more than I hate men like me. I won't get anything done if you keep complimenting my voice. Please keep complimenting my voice. I believe my words are better than normal words. This is a kind of vanity. By vanity, I mean veil. By veil, I mean aura. It's all smearing together. I can hardly see the world. My eyes didn't grow normal inside their sockets. Instead, they wormed in through the back of my skull. You can finger the tunnels they made if you want, but why would you want that? You have everything you could ever need. Biopsy needles, starships, breath is a loop. Sex is good news. Remember this as a kind of nutrition. I don't know what that is. I like it, though. I mean, it does stuff. I was reading this thing about how, you guys know the Argentinian writer Borges? Yes? Love for Borges in the room? It's heavy love right there, yeah. yeah, round of applause for Borges. He took a trip to the Sahara. He was really, really excited about going to the Sahara. When he was very interested in the infinite and writing about the infinite. And when he went to the Sahara, there's this anecdote about him just picking up a handful of sand and looking at it and then just kind of letting it run through his fingers. And then he kind of smiles and says, "I've modified the Sahara." I'm getting goosebumps just saying that. Yeah, I think that's the best thing. That's like the best poem you guys will hear tonight. this is called Waiting for the 12th. It has an epigraph. In Shia Islam, the 12th Imam is said to have disappeared in the 9th century. It is believed his return at the end of the world will deliver order from the chaos. Waiting for the 12th. No one ever brings up the wages of virtue. The cost of avoiding that which you were built to do. Some men actually love their enemies. Remind me to tell you about them when you arrive, and when will that be again? I've already spiced the duck and hidden the sherry. Even grain has genes that say, drink this, or bend there, so much like our own. I'm rubbing yogurt through my hair, getting ready for your return. I read old mail from my Baba Bazorg, the Farsi, like tea leaves or exotic blades. Years ago, he melted into the tautness of earth like a pad of butter on turtle meat. The birch curled its tongue. I was full of credible fears. Today, I'm full of olives and smoke, ashing on the good lace. I'm comfy as a snake sleeping in a silk shoe, though my glasses are foggy, or maybe I just got perfume in my eye. Either way, I'll recognize you by your heartbeat. You'll recognize me by the green bird in my shirt pocket. If you hurry, I'll let you hold her. Her flightlessness will mean nothing. In fact, my whole house has been cleansed entirely of symbols. A strange call came from the West, and I understood it in this new language. I burnt away my candles and woke the sleeping spider, resting his fangs against my hand. There will be nothing here to distract you from your work. Just some old pears browning in the kitchen and a glass vase of pink roses humming their little songs. You guys doing okay? I thought of that Borges thing, and it seemed germane at the moment, and then I realized I was just, like, telling a story that was on my mind. But I don't know. I think it's just great. This is called Ways to Harm a Thing. Throw scissors at it. Fill it with straw and set it on fire. Or set it off for the colonies with only some books and dinner plates and a stuffed bear named Friend Bear for me to lose in New Jersey. Did I say me? Things have been getting less and less hypothetical since I unhitched myself from your bedpost. Everyone I love is too modern to be caught grieving. In order to be consumed, first you need to be consumable, but there's not a single part of you I could fit in my mouth. In a dream, I pull back your foreskin and reveal a fat vase stuffed with crow feathers. This seems a faithful translation of the real thing. Another way to harm something is to melt its fuse box, make it learn to live in the dark. I still want to suck the bones out from your hands, plant them like the seeds we found in an antique textbook, though those never sprouted and may not have even been seeds. When I was a sailor, I found a sunken ziggurat, spent weeks diving through room after room, discovering this or that sacred shroud. One way to bury something is to bury it forever. When I was water, you poured me out over the dirt. Is anyone here from Chicago? Do you know Rez's restaurants in Andersonville? No? Oh. Anyone else? Well, there's this magical restaurant in Chicago called Rez's Restaurant. I grew up all over the place, but a lot of all over the place was in the Midwest. And as you can imagine, it was difficult growing up to find restaurants that corresponded to my particular ethnic loadout. And so we would take these sort of like family pilgrimage things into Andersonville in Chicago to go to this one Persian restaurant that we knew about. There are several now. But it was like the biggest deal in the world, and I would be excited about it for weeks in advance and start salivating at the sight of the Chicago skyline, you know, and still do. Yeah, so this is a poem about that. I mean, to the extent anything is a poem about anything. Rez's Restaurant, Chicago, 1997. The waiters milled about, filling sumac shakers, clearing away plates of onion and radish. My father pointed to each person, whispered, "Persian," about the old man with the silver beard, whispered, "Arab," about the woman with the eye mole, "Persian," the teenager pouring water, "White," the man on the phone. I was 8 and watching and amazed. I asked how he could possibly tell when they were all brown-skinned, dark-haired like us. Almost everyone in the restaurant looked like us. He smiled a proud little smile, a warm nest of lips, said, "It's easy," said, "We're just uglier." He returned to his lamb, but I was baffled, hardly touched my qayma. I had huge glasses and bad teeth. I felt plenty Persian. When the woman with light eyes and blonde brown hair left our check, my father looked at me. I said, "Arab?" He shook his head, laughed. We drove home. I grew up. It took years to put together what my father meant that day. My father, who listened exclusively to the Rolling Stones, who called the Beatles a band for girls. My father, who wore only black, even around the house, whose arms could cut chicken wire and make stew and bulged with old farm scars. My father, my father, my father built the world. The first sound I ever heard was his voice whispering the azan in my right ear. I didn't need anything else. My father cherished that we were ugly, and so being ugly was blessed. I smiled with all my teeth. Thanks. Maybe just a few more. This is called "The Horses Were Once Men Like Us." I know I'm not supposed to say, "Be gorgeous for me," but it's all I ever think, my kneading now long as a well rope. At this very moment, your throat is glowing like a rhino horn carved into a throat. And look, all our horses are heaving in the sand. Try weeping at them. I believe heaven is real and hell is made up. Do you agree? I will love you either way. It's still your birthday for a few more hours. How would you like to spend them? Happily, I imagine. I hope I haven't been boring you. Like any ex, I fear I'm more useful in math than in the spoken world, at the center of a circle. If we slipped into a bathtub full of molten lead, how much lead would we displace? And who would be left to feed the horses? That's another goofy one. This is called My Kingdom for a Murmur of Fanfare. You guys know the exasperated utterance, like, my kingdom for a Miller Lite, or whatever. This is called My Kingdom for a Murmur of Fanfare. I don't think anyone has ever said, my kingdom for a Miller Lite. My kingdom for a murmur of fanfare. It's common to live properly, to pretend you don't feel heat or grief. Wave nightly at Miss Fugue and Mr. Goggles before diving into your nightcap, before reading yourself a bedtime story, or watching your beloved sink to the bottom of a lake and noting his absence in your log. Then the next day you drop his clothes off at Goodwill like a sack of mail from a warplane and hobble back to your hovel like a knight moving only in L's. It is comfortable to be alive this way, especially now, but it makes you so vulnerable to shock. You ignore the mortgage and find a falconer's glove in your yard, whole hands still inside. Or you arrive home after a long day to discover your children have grown suddenly hideous and unlovable. What I'm trying to say is, I think it's okay to accelerate around corners, to swallow all your laundry quarters and grunt back at the mailman. So much of everything is dumb baffle. Water puts out fire. My diseases can become your diseases. And two hounds will fight over a feather, because feathers are strange. All I want is to take off my cowboy hat and show you my jeweled horns. If we slow dance, I will ask you not to tug on them, but secretly, I will want that very much. Thank you guys for being here with me and for being here with each other. I hope I get an opportunity after this to interact substantively with a hearty portion of you. This is called For You, I've Started Sleeping. For you, I've started sleeping again. I'm bad company when I don't, though so much more productive. It's not the sleep I mind, it's the waking, always such a startle, like finding a drifter in your kitchen, cooking your eggs, which actually happened. I ate them with him, we listened to records. Even the best places are crawling with people. Tell them to stop at once. Remind them their oblivions are incompatible with ours. The body is a glass orchard, or at least yours is, every part blooming and breakable. Would it really be so bad if I loved you for your beauty? There are worse reasons to love a thing. Because it's hungry, for instance, or lost in space. You are exhausting, the messenger. I will make no more resolutions. Reproducible joy is hardly joy at all. I can be louder than any bird and redder, too. Watch, and you'll see, I'll show you the Quran I dog-eared as a boy but never read. I'll take you to the closet where I kept ounces of dead dragonflies piled up for a rainy day. Did I say ounces? I meant gallons. I meant years. You're going to love it, my sweet, elegant Gasper. I promise you will never want to leave. Maybe two more? Is that okay? You feeling okay for two more? Please. I was not, that's not what that was, but you guys were just sort of staring at me like waiting for someone else to do it, and I was like, shit, has it been like an hour and a half already or something? Oh, no.
Josh, you're free to leave. I don't know. This is called Learning to Pray. My father moved patiently, cupping his hands beneath his chin, kneeling on a janamaz, then pressing his forehead to a circle of Karbala clay. Occasionally, he'd glance over at my clumsy mirroring, my two big Packers t-shirt and pebble red shorts, and smile a little despite himself. Bending there with his whole form marbled in light, he looked like a photograph of a famous ghost. I ached to be so beautiful. I hardly knew anything yet. Not the boiling point of water or the capital of Iran. Not the five pillars of Islam or the verse of the sword. I knew only that I wanted to be like him, that twilit stripe of father, mesmerizing as the blue-white Iznik tile hanging in our kitchen, worshipped as the long, faultless tongue of God. Thank you, guys. And can we get another round of applause for the introducers and for David Kirby for everything that they've done? And to Coleridge and to Borges and all other divine presences who have graced us with their spirits. Thanks. This is called Every Drunk Wants to Die Sober. It's how we beat the game. It's true. Hazrat Ali, son-in-law of the Prophet, was martyred by a poisoned sword while saying his evening prayers. His final words, I am successful. I am successful. I want to carve it into my forehead. I've been cut into before. It barely hurt. Still, for effect, I tore my shirt to tourniquets. Let me now be calm for one fucking second. Let me be open to revision. Eternity looms in the corner like a home invader saying, don't mind me, I'm just here to watch you nap. If you throw prayer beads at a ghost, they will cut through him soft as a saber through silk. I finally have answers to the questions I taught my mother not to ask, but now she won't ask them. As a child, I was so tiny and sweet. She would tuck me in saying, Mushbukradet, a mouse should eat you. I melted away that sweetness like sugar and water, like once fresh honey dripping down a thigh. Today, I lean on habit and rarely unstrap my muzzle. It's hard to speak of something so gauche as ambition while the whole wheezing mosaic chips away. But let it be known, I do hope one day to be free of this body's dry wood. If living proves anything, it's that such astonishment is possible. The kite loosed from its string outpaces its shadow. An olive tree explodes into the sky, dazzling even the night. I don't understand the words I babble in home movies from Tehran, but I assume they were lovely. I have always been a tangle of tongue and pretty want. In Islam, there are prayers to return almost anything, even prayers to return faith. I have been going through book after book, pushing the sounds through my teeth. I will keep making these noises as long as deemed necessary until there is nothing left of me to forgive.